Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Steve Silver Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Boys and girls, it is a Saturday edition, a special, can I emphasize special even more,
I don't think you can.
I don't think I can either. A special Saturday edition of the Steve Silver Show. Why Saturday? Well, because, well, Thursday just didn't work out all that well this week. A lot of things went down that made it possible for us to do Saturday. So that's why. But nonetheless, we appreciate everybody tuning in for this special edition, Super Bowl Xlix edition of the Steve Silver Show. Super Bowl 49 going down tomorrow, Bo. The Seattle Seahawks versus the New England Patriots. Tom Brady versus Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. The new legacy versus the old legacy. Good versus evil, desperation versus intimidation. Second go round for the Seattle Seahawks. We haven't actually seen a back-to-back contender in the Super Bowl since the Patriots did it in 04-05, back in Tom Brady's early career.
Yep.
A lot of good things are going on with the Super Bowl, Bo, and of course we're going to be talking about that all show long. We're going to be talking a little prop bets as well, too. I'm going to be throwing a little prop bets your way as well, too, so we're going to have a little fun with that. We're going to talk about this we're going to talk about this game from an offensive standpoint, a defensive standpoint, of course, from the coaching standpoint, Pete Carroll versus Bill Belichick, a coach who has been here now for the sixth time versus a coach who is making his second straight appearance in a Super Bowl. Belichick has done that before. So we're going to be talking about the coaches, which should be interesting, just exactly if there is an advantage on one side or the other. A lot of people would assume that if a coach has been in this game for six times, Bo, that there probably could be a distinct advantage. I don't necessarily think that. I think Pete Carroll has basically, I think Pete Carroll in his time here in the NFL gets it, understands the magnitude of this game, considering he won it last year. I don't think this is going to be an intimidation factor at all for Pete Carroll going up against Bill Belichick, but we'll certainly talk about that. We'll talk about the Patriots and their I would consider a lack of offense. I wouldn't consider the Patriots a stalwart on offense, just considering that, well, for the most part, they're second to the last in the league in explosive plays. 20 plays are over, Bo.
Mm-hmm.
Settling for the 10 to 20 yard range, which is exactly where the Seahawks defense likes to defend. That's pretty much their wheelhouse. They are the number one defense in the NFL, so we'll get into that. But before we do, Bo, it is Saturday, special edition, Super Bowl edition. How are you doing this morning, my friend?
Well, okay, so you're saying this is special.
It's special.
Is this what I'm getting from this? This is special?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I used the word special 20 times in 1 minute.
You really
I don't know. I don't think I could have emphasized special even more. It is very special.
Well, you could have, but at that point it becomes obnoxious.
Yeah, okay. Okay, it's a very special obnoxious edition. Yes, we can go there. Yeah, we can go there. Why not?
Why not? Why not? It's Saturday morning.
It's Saturday. Yeah, exactly. It sounds like you're having a good morning, Bo.
I'm having a good morning, although I stepped outside and immediately turned into a smurf. It's cold.
It's cold? Well, you know, it's Baltimore.
It's really cold over here.
It's Baltimore.
You're in Washington, so I'm sure it's pretty chilly up there where you're at, too.
No, you know, actually, we've actually had a very mild winter. As a matter of fact, it's probably 50 in the 50s, some, you know, 50s outside. I don't know. I didn't watch the Doppler radar this morning. I didn't get a good look at the weather. But I will say that we've actually had a string of beautiful weather this week. Sunshine, yeah. It actually reminded me of early spring. It looked well outside. It's been good.
we got down to 16 degrees last night. 16.
I don't envy it. I you know, Bo, I don't envy you at all. You guys can keep that weather on the East Coast. You guys can keep it. You guys can hold it. You know, put your arms around it, snuggle up to it a little bit. You guys can have that.
I don't want to snuggle up to this. 16 degrees with a very vicious wind gust. That's just not fun.
Well, you know what? There's always a nice warm blanket and a bottle of Jameson for you, Bo. There's always that.
You know that's true. That's true.
That's true. You can always
keep
warm.
And I did have a little Jameson last night. So.
So, Bo, we have ourselves a wonderful show today. And, of course, well, you'd love to sit here and talk about your propensity for Jameson all show long. I'm sure we can have a few good stories about Bo and a bottle of Jameson. But we have some news to get to before we get into the bulk of the show. And, of course, that news always comes from after this type of audio. Take a listen.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
Spanning the globe it is, and we start with topic number one coming from Las Vegas, Nevada. Bo, a source told TMZ Sports that both Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather have agreed to fight. And a date and the location, of course, Las Vegas, has already been set. As a source says, a formal agreement has not been signed, but everyone expects the signatures soon, and negotiators are putting the finishing touches, of course, you can't see me, but I'm using air quotes, on the deal. So apparently,
well, listen, look.
The two of these guys came to agreement. And most would expect the fight to go down on May 2nd. And, of course, if that is the case, pay-per-view will definitely be bought at my house. Bo, I got to be honest with you, man. I'm excited. I'm finally excited that this fight, the fight that everybody has been wanting to see for at least 10 years now, is going to happen. I'm very happy. I'm very happy that both Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao were able to put away their differences here. And I know that Floyd Mayweather did not like Bob Arum, who was Manny Pacquiao's representation. So I'm glad that somebody stepped away from this in order to make this thing, because this is exactly what the sport of boxing has been needing for a long time. This is a sport that's basically dead, and this fight is going to go a long way of resurrecting it. And it's probably not going to be just one fight. This is probably going to be like a two, maybe three fight type of deal. I'm very happy that this thing finally got together. I'm elated. This is, when I saw this morning, I'm like, finally. Finally, Bo.
Right.
Finally.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, boxing needs this. You know, the way that MMA has really taken over this particular part of sports over the last, what, 5-10 years, it's because of boxing's demise. So this is huge for the sport of boxing. It's huge for traditional boxing fans like myself. I also will definitely be getting a pay-per-view of this one, because I think it's going to be a fantastic fight. But, you know, you had to see this coming. I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago. You know, Pacquiao agreeing to all these conditions. At that point, Mayweather had to step up and sign on the dotted line. Otherwise, he's going to have that reputation of ducking Pacquiao, and that's going to hurt his legacy going forward. So I'm not surprised that they were able to come together. The first domino was Pacquiao a few weeks ago. Now they're finally getting everything done, official. We're going to have a date, a time, and you better believe I'm going to have that on pay-per-view with a bottle of Jameson.
we're still a good few months away from this actually going down, but if you had to make an early prediction on this fight, nothing being equal yet, because we really haven't gotten into it, you know, and I'm sure in the next couple months, as this fight gets up to it, this is going to be something that you and I are going to be talking about. We'll be talking about the tail of the tape. We'll be talking about reach and punch and all that other good stuff. But just from first blush, Bo, at first blush, who do you like in this match?
I think it's going to go the distance. I mean, I think that these two fighters are just both very, very good. And I don't see either one knocking the other out. It's going to be a TKO. It's going to go to the cards. And I like Pacquiao.
You know what's kind of funny is I hope it doesn't go to the cards. I really hope it doesn't. Well, you know what I hope? This is exactly what I hope. A bloodbath. That's what I want to see. Because both of these fighters, Bo, do not like each other. They really do not. And from the opening bell, I want to see blood. I want to see gore. I want to see the old Rocky versus Apollo. Two guys going toe to toe from the opening. I want to see knockdowns. I want to see good clean heart fight. I don't want to see anything bad. I just want to see these two guys giving what everybody wants to see, which is a seventh round knockout. And make no, and this is what I like about this, because Floyd can fight, man. Floyd, and we talk about how Floyd has been ducking and ducking and ducking and basically beating up on these cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very good technical defender in the ring. That's what I like about Floyd. He can defend pretty well. And the thing about Pacquiao is I wonder how Pacquiao's speed. Now, it's not as quick as he was, say, if like 5 years ago, but he still has that punching speed and the ability to go inside. And I'm curious about how that's going to translate to Mayweather and his technical ability to defend in the ring and then counter.
Right.
Because that's where Floyd's game is. He can go on the offensive, but he's deadly on the counter as he's coming off of defense.
Right.
This is going to be very good. I would love to see how Manny reacts to Floyd's counter, and if that's going to play a role in it. But I want to see an early knockdown, and I want to see a decisive blow in the seventh. Like, I want this to be like Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran, like the first one, not the second one,
right.
Not the No Mas fight, but the first one where it was just bloody. That's what I want to see.
Absolutely. No, you know,
I'm really, that's what I want to see.
We're gonna have a good fight. You know, I think it's gonna be a fantastic fight. No matter what happens, whether they go to the cards, whether one of them knocks the other out, it's going to be a fantastic fight. And
no,
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Headline number two is coming from the world of golf, Scottsdale, Arizona. And, Bo, I have to be honest with you, I do. I was buying into the hype. I was buying into what Tiger Woods was saying, that he was felt the best that he's ever felt. You know, he was hitting the ball as far, you know, the farthest that he has in his career. His touch was still, he was still working on his touch around the greens, but for the most part, you know, the Tiger Woods that we had seen before the golf club to the Escalade episode with his then wife, Elin Nordegren, that Tiger Woods, he was saying all the right things. All the analysis from all the golf experts, they were saying all the right things. I was buying into it. I didn't think Tiger Woods was going to necessarily win this thing, but I didn't think that he was going to go out and shoot an 82, Bo. A good friend of mine, one of my really good friends, he's my golfing buddy. He can shoot an 82.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he can do. Not Tiger Woods. I was expecting Tiger Woods to at least be competitive. And then he goes out and shoots the worst round of his career, Bo.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of this. I really don't, Bo. But an 82, seemingly he's supposed to be healthy. There was a swing change that was going to take the torque and the stress off his back. He's gonna fine tweak some of his things. But Bo, I'm gonna ask you straight up. Is Tiger Woods done? Are we done seeing Tiger Woods be competitive, and are we watching the end?
I don't think we're done in terms of seeing him be competitive. I don't think we're ever going to see Tiger the way he used to be, the way, you know, just dominating tournaments. I don't think we're ever going to see that Tiger again. I mean, you have to look at the injuries he's had. You know, his back, his knee. I mean, when you talk about playing golf, you know, you put a lot of torque on your back.
You put a lot of torque on your back.
You put a lot of torque on your knees. You know, it's not a sport that's conducive to coming back from a back injury. So I don't think we're going to see him at that level again. I think maybe this tournament is a little too early to stick the fork in him. I mean, it's his first tournament in how long?
Yeah, not yet.
He missed most of last year, and I don't know how many rounds he was able to get in practice-wise to shake some of the rust off. Maybe that's what was going on, but I don't think he's done. You know, I think he's going to be competitive, but I don't think we're going to see him win tournaments at the rate that we're used to seeing from Tiger Woods. I think that those days are definitely over.
He hasn't won a major title since 2008. He hasn't won the Masters in 10 years. This is a guy who has not been Tiger Woods in a very long time. Now, I understand he had some personal issues, and he's been dealing recently with some health issues. But this is now to a point where we need Tiger Woods to be Tiger Woods. And I'm worried that I'm worried that he doesn't know how to get back to being Tiger Woods.
He may not.
The one thing that he had was his old coach Haney, Hank Haney, I think his name was. Like, you know, you see him everywhere on TV with the Haney Project. When Tiger Woods was Tiger Woods, that was his swing doctor. And I'm wondering if too much has happened where they can't reconcile that type of relationship, because I think that there's only one person that can get Tiger Woods back to being Tiger Woods and understands Tiger Woods' body chemistry to a point where he understands what type of swing is going to work with him moving forward, because I think this is all now just on Tiger. I think Tiger is basically flirting and flirting with different swings. You know, I mean, let's be honest. He's not a dumb individual. So he understands the game of golf, and I'm sure he understands his body better than anything else. So when he goes on the range and he starts testing certain things, some things will feel good, and so then he'll go with that. I think he needs to get back to having that expert who knows exactly the golf swing and understands the golf swing from different angles and understands different golf swing from different philosophies to help Tiger get back to where Tiger is. I'm worried that will never happen. That reconciliation will never happen, and it should, because we're talking about the greatest golfer, one of the, if not the greatest golfer of our generation, but maybe also in the history of the sport. But right now, he looks like a shell of his former self, and he has no idea how to get back to where he was.
Right. Well, you know, something else that makes this problematic for Tiger is look at the talent in golf now. You got McIlroy.
The Irish kid, who is
absolutely fantastic. You know, I think that he's facing just a higher level of talent, especially with some of these young guys coming up in the PGA over the last couple of years. And that's not going to obviously help matters when it comes to Tiger. I mean, I think, you know, even if Tiger was Tiger, a guy like McIlroy could really take him to the extreme and take him to playoff holes and major championships. So it's not just his health, and it's not just the fact that he hasn't been Tiger for so long. It's also the competition he's facing is much, much stiffer than it was 10 years ago.
I would love to see Tiger get back on top because, again, what's kind of funny is back in the day, Bo, Tiger was like the New York Yankees. He was the golfer that everybody loved to hate because all he did was win every tournament that he was entered in. Chances are he was going to win it, or at least he was going to compete to win for it. And now you feel sorry for Tiger.
Yeah.
Now that's the way I feel. I don't know about you, but now I feel sorry for Tiger to a point where I'd love to see Tiger get back on top. And even if it only means just one major victory the rest of the way, you know what I mean? Just one. I don't care if his career ends up being over. I just want to see it one more time. I'd love to see it at the Masters, get that final green jacket, and then, you know what, hang it up. And I would be okay with that. But just go on time, figure out a way just to put four solid rounds together, get yourself a green jacket, and then fade into the sunset.
I mean, you know, I think what I find the most disappointing right now about Tiger Woods is his approach seems to be kind of a woe is me approach. You know, where's that fight? Where's that chip on his shoulder to prove everyone wrong?
Right.
I haven't seen that yet.
No.
I mean, when he was dominating every single tournament, he had a chip on his shoulder. And you can see the chip on his shoulder.
Not only did he take names on the course, but he also did it with the media as well, too. It was you just knew that the man was in the zone. That was, you're absolutely correct on that one. Hey, but Bo, honorable mention this morning. We have spanning the globe honorable mention. I don't know the reason why, it's because I just want to brush over it really quick. I don't really want to get into it because obviously it's tennis. I don't really want to get into it because, well, yeah, it's tennis. But Serena Williams did beat Sharapova again. I think that's like for the 18th straight time that they've met each other. This one was in the Australian Open final, and she won her sixth Australian Open. So good for Serena Williams. She'll be probably the most decorated American tennis star, whatever. There's that. So also honorable mention, Suge Knight, rap mogul, charged with murder, fatal hit and run, Compton, California. Go Suge. So there you go. Well, you know, I got to throw that in because I thought you could appreciate it, you know. Little Snoop Dogg, little Tupac, little Suge Knight. you know, two of America's most wanted, Suge Knight, charged with murder. He's still up to his Suge Knight ways. So there's that. But Bo, let's get into the nuts and bolts of why we're on the air today. It is Super Bowl Sunday tomorrow, Super Bowl 49, or what I like to call Super Bowl Xlix.
Mm-hmm.
Big game. Seattle Seahawks back to back in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots, who have made Super Bowls a habit. 6 times in the 13-year career of Tom Brady that he's going to be playing in this game. This seems to be a game that's always tailored for Tom Brady. But I'm going to be honest with you, okay? This is not Tom Brady from 10 years ago. It's not. This is not even Tom Brady from 3 years ago, where if the game is on the line, that you can count on Tom Brady to make a play. I don't think he's that type of quarterback anymore. I really don't. I think Tom Brady is a guy that is very dependent on the pieces that are around him, that he absolutely needs Rob Gronkowski to do what he does. He absolutely needs LeGarrette Blount to do what he does in order for Tom Brady to look like the quarterback that everybody just assumes that he is, Bo.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one thing to do it against the AFC, where you see a lot of high-powered offenses, but you don't really see a lot of good defenses. I'm not taking anything away from Baltimore's defense or Cincinnati's defense or Pittsburgh's defense or anything like that. I just don't think that Tom Brady has faced a defense like this. I don't think he's – now, granted, they played each other 2 years ago in CenturyLink Field, but that was before Seattle really came into its own. That was the year that they lost to Atlanta in the divisional round of the playoffs. They were together with this core, I guess you can say it was their first go round of really being a championship level caliber type of team. The very next year, obviously, they absolutely just punked out the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl, and now we're in year three of this window with this core together that is absolutely motivated to come out into this type of game. And if you thought both of the last 10 weeks of what the Seahawks were able to do was a special string of football, just wait till this team runs out of that tunnel holding the 12th man flag, and they got the juice going, they got the snot coming out of the nose. This team has their ears pinned back. This defense has their ears pinned back, and there's a big, big bullseye on the front side of Tom Brady's jersey. And I can just tell you, this team is going to be motivated to put Tom Brady in the dirt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned that it's a defense that Brady hasn't faced before, and I agree with you, because this Seattle defense is a very smothering defense. And when you look at the weapons that Tom Brady has, it's nowhere near the weapons that Peyton Manning had in the Super Bowl last year, and you saw what this defense was able to do to Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos.
Right.
For the Patriots to win this game, you know, said they're going to have to get to the secondary, they're going to have to protect Tom Brady, and they're going to have to run the football. All three things that Seattle's defense does very, very well. You know, I look at this game, and I just see a mismatch. The more I've thought about the Super Bowl excellence, as you like to call it, the more I've thought about the last 2 weeks, I see a mismatch in favor of Seattle. And I've picked Seattle the entire last couple of weeks. Now I'm starting to hone in on a score, and I don't think it's going to be all that close. You know, I think Seattle's going to come out.
Hold on, before you give your score, because we're not at that point in the show yet, Bo. We're not there yet.
Well, I didn't.
I know you're chomping at the bit, but the thing you talk about mismatches, and you're absolutely correct. The thing about this is, and if one were so inclined to look at the numbers, say like a guy like me who lives and thrives off of numbers and literally thinks like a good Friday night is to look at zip projections and drink a little beer. That's my idea of a good. That's me in a nutshell. So yes, I am inclined to look at. You are. I'll take it another step further. You are a go out to the bar type of guy. You like to mix and mingle and socialize. I like to sit at home with a nice cup of jasmine tea and look at zips projections. Yeah, that's me. Anyway, I kind of went off the rails right there. Anyway, the thing about this is, New England's offense is not an explosive offense, okay? It's not what we saw back in 2008 when Tom Brady had Randy Moss and he had that vertical threat down the outside of the numbers where he can just throw up those 50-50 balls and have a 6'11 Randy Moss going up there and catching it. He doesn't have that type of vertical offense. this team ranked second to last in plays of 20 yards or more. Basically the deep play. They don't have that ability consistently to go up and make those type of plays. Now, what they like to do is they like to use the running game effectively. They like to use that offensive line to get that up front push, to use LeGarrette Blount to put them in very good third and short, third and manageable type of situations. And that's when they like to use Julian Edelman or Rob Gronkowski mm-hmm. on those little out plays where you can get those chunk yardages from yards after catch. Well, here's the problem. This is the biggest problem for New England, is Seattle is the best at defending that. They make their that defense makes their living on not giving up yards after play. In a National Football League that sees a lot of teams that really don't practice good tackling technique, the Seahawks are a very good tackling team. They're probably the best tackling team in the league. They just do not allow teams to do those type of things. And when you look at the return of Bobby Wagner at middle linebacker, that basically changed this entire season for the Seahawks. Putting mm-hmm. him back in the middle, allowing KJ right on the outside, and what you'll see, especially with Gronkowski, is if they're not bringing Cam Chancellor down in the box, basically using him as a fifth defensive back against tight ends, then what they'll do is they'll mm-hmm. use that zone and they'll match up KJ right on that side, who's also quick for a linebacker. And so it's not necessarily a mismatch against Rob Gronkowski. So that's going to be matchup number one, is how the Seahawks systematically take away certain elements of Tom Brady, whether it be LeGarrette Blount or whether it be Rob Gronkowski. And what the Seahawks want to do, Bo, believe this or not, they want to put the ball in Tom Brady's hands, because they believe that Tom Brady cannot beat them anymore. That is what they want to mm-hmm. do. They want to take, first of all, they want to take away LeGarrette Blount. Then they want to take away Rob Gronkowski and let Julian Edelman and Tom Brady. If you think you can do it with Edelman and Brady, okay, fine. We're not going to blitz you. We're going to bring four standard off the line. We're going to put pressure in your face, and that's how we're going to beat you. You know exactly what we're going to do. So here it is, Tom. If you want this Super Bowl, you specifically, not Gronkowski, not LeGarrette Blount, you are going to have to beat us, Bo. And you know what? You're absolutely right. It's a complete mismatch.
It is. It's a complete mismatch. And you know, and we all know that Belichick likes to take your strength and attack it. And that's what he's going to have to do to win this Super Bowl. The thing for Seattle is they don't have to do that. Just play their game, because they're so good on the defensive side of the football. They don't have to worry about taking out Brady out of the game, or Gronkowski out of the game, or Blount out of the game. They just have to play their straight-up smothering defense, and they're going to give this New England offense all kinds of fits.
Now, there are some worries for me, because, again, like I mentioned just a second ago, New England's offensive line has actually played very well this season. It was one of those underrated offensive line stories that a lot of people don't talk about, just because, well, it's the offensive line and nobody really talks about that. But after that Kansas City game where everybody had New England written off, there was a lot to do about them trading Logan Mankins, and it was a offensive line unit that took a while for them to gel. But once they did, and then once they got LeGarrette Blount back into the mix, this team became what they are known for, especially like 15 years ago when they were winning all those Super Bowls, was a power running team, a team that was not afraid to hand the ball off 25 times. And I would probably assume that this is what they're going to try to establish early, is LeGarrette Blount early. And if you notice, when Seattle had, you know, when you look at Seattle's losses and you look at what teams were able to do with them, the Seahawks did struggle a little bit against power running teams, but that was before Bobby Wagner. That was before B Wag stepped back in the middle of that field and really put the pressure up the middle. And basically, what I mean by that is, if an offensive line was able to create a hole up the middle, north south versus the Seahawks defense, KJ Wright versus Bobby Wagner in the middle of the field was a mismatch for that Seahawks defense. And now when you put Wagner back in the middle, when you're clogging up those holes with Bobby Wagner, who is an absolute beast, it forces running backs to go side to side instead of north and south, which basically means you're playing into the teeth of the Seahawks' strength, which is a very athletic defense side to side. That crew can move well side to side. They are quick, they are long, they're athletic, they're... That is something that is a mismatch now for LeGarrette Blount. But then again, he is still a physical running back, to a point where it's just like Marshawn Lynch, where it's like you hand it off and he might only get two, but the next time it's four, or maybe it's going to be 15. They want to wear the Seahawks defense down to me, that is a little bit of an issue because we have seen it at times this season where Seattle couldn't defend that very well. So a part of me is a little bit – put it this way. I'm more worried about LeGarrette Blount than I am Tom Brady. Put it that way.
Right. Well, I mean, for New England to have success in this game, they're going to have to run the football. But then there's just no question about it. You've already highlighted it. You look at the losses that the Seahawks had this year, and even their wins that were tight wins when they struggled, it was because the opposing offense was able to run the football effectively. You know, I'm looking specifically at the Dallas game. I'm looking at the NFC Championship game where they struggled against a good running game. I don't see LeGarrette Blount being that type of a back, the kind of a back that can actually challenge the Seattle defense in terms of the running game. I don't think that New England's running game is good enough to actually make that happen. So we'll see. You know, I mean, I agree
right.
with you. I think that LeGarrette Blount is the biggest threat to Seattle. I just don't see him and that running game being that good to where Seattle's going to have that much of a problem where they struggle and lose this game.
I'm with you, and if you're wondering why I was just laughing at the end of it, I'm reading the list of some of these Super Bowl prop bets because we're gonna be covering a little bit of these a little bit later in the show, but some very good prop bets already. But the thing about this is, for the Seahawks offensively, Bo, and we've talked a lot about what we can expect defensively, but I would, I want to talk a little bit offensively because this is an offensive unit that struggled literally for 3.5 quarters in the NFC Championship before it was a turnover that really, propelled Seattle. Then of course it was the fake field goal that led to the touchdown. So this was an offense that literally was non-existent for 3.5 quarters before they were existent and they ended up winning. It's important
right.
for the Seahawks. Of course, it's important to establish Marshawn Lynch, and I would probably assume that's kind of a given. To me, it's establishing a passing game.
Right.
Now, this is an offensive unit that really does lack a true number one and literally has a number three as a number one, and I would probably assume against New England secondary, which does have Darrell Revis, and it also has former Seahawks corner Brandon Browner in that unit, I would expect to see a lot of double teams on Bobby. Good Lord, why this happens every. It is seriously shenanigans all the way around. Doug Baldwin, there you go. I would assume to see some double team action on Doug Baldwin, considering he's been Russell Wilson's most consistent target all season. And I'm wondering what that will mean in terms of the passing game. To me, it is essential early for Russell Wilson to be able to get into a nice rhythm in the passing game. I don't need him literally to start the game off throwing 10 consecutive passes to do it, but get yourself into some early, like whether it's like a five yard dig route, something to the middle, like an inside slant, something like that, or maybe use the running game to set up Luke Wilson a little bit on the outside. Just something small to get into an early tempo. Because really, the object of this is to use Marshawn Lynch, whether you're in pistol sets or read option sets, whatever, that's fine. But do yourself a favor where if you're going to exclusively use him. And by the way, this is how Seattle generally likes to set it up, because if you're using Marshawn Lynch, then that outside edge container is going to have to start paying attention to him. And if that's the case, and all of a sudden that outside edge contain starts moving a little bit inside because of the threat of Marshawn Lynch, that's obviously going to open up the outside for the read option with Russell Wilson to start to start really gashing. But it's also going to create one-on-one matchups for guys like Jermaine Kearse and also Luke Wilson, who, by the way, has to have a big game for the Seahawks to win this game. Jermaine Kearse, to me, is going to be the X factor, because we saw, especially in the NFC Championship game, 4 passes that were thrown to him that ultimately ended up being picked off, and of course he catches the game winner. But if Doug Baldwin is going to be doubled, and if they're going to use Doug Baldwin as, I guess you can say, a spy in the passing game, Jermaine Kearse is going to have a monster game in the Super Bowl like he did last year for the Seahawks to do better than what we saw for 3.5 quarters against the Packers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not just the receivers. I mean, Russell Wilson has to play better than he did in that AFC Championship game. I mean, for the first
doubt.
He was all over the place. And I think that was their main problem in that NFC Championship game was Russell Wilson was just so awful for 3.5 quarters. And you really see how much that offense relies on Russell Wilson to be Russell Wilson. So, you know, provided that he comes out and he plays at the level that we're all used to seeing him playing, you know, establish the running game with Marshawn Lynch, it's going to open up passes to Kurtz, it's going to open up passes to Baldwin, it's going to open up all kinds of passing opportunities for Russell Wilson. The question is he going to be the Russell Wilson that we know? Or is it going to be this shell of a quarterback that he was for 3.5 quarters of the NFC Championship game? That, to me, is the key for the Seahawks offense. Which Russell Wilson are you going to get?
Here's the deal. I want Russell Wilson to not be prototypical Russell Wilson. And what I mean by that is, listen, I trust his decision-making process. I really do. But we've also seen times where he has elected not to use the read option in certain situations where maybe it does call for it because maybe he's not trying, you know, he's not trying to be, you know, too, what's the word I'm looking for here? Maybe flashy might be the word. Doesn't want to take away from the strength of what it is. But I think you have to realize that, Bo, that is the strength of the Seahawks, which is basically north and south and east and west running. The running game is their bread and butter. And there's going to be a time where if you do establish Marshawn Lynch, that maybe it would be a better thing to check out of that, especially if you're in the read option set, that Russell Wilson might take advantage of it a little bit more than what we're seeing from it, because you have to be able to keep New England's defense moving side to side. That is going to be the key for me, is because if they key it and they stack 8 in the box because of Marshawn Lynch, you're going to have to be able to move them side to side. You're going to have to be able to go sideline to sideline, and the only person that really can do that is Russell Wilson. So he's going to have to do that a little bit more instead of being that conservative decision maker. Not that there's anything wrong with it, because again, they're in back-to-back Super Bowls because of it. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that, you know, use it a little bit more. Use it a little bit more than what he's been showing us thus far. I believe if you do that, Bo, if Russell Wilson becomes the X factor, because everybody just assumes that Marshawn Lynch is going to be the X factor, and who knows, maybe he will. But to me, for the Seahawks to really win this game, of course, defense is going to have to play a huge paramount. But this thing is going to be on Russell Wilson, because this again is Russell Wilson versus Tom Brady. If you're gonna out Tom Brady, this game is gonna have to come down to Russell Wilson, and he's gonna have to be a little bit better, a little bit better.
Look, you know, I mean, I agree with that, but at the same time, you know, this is the mismatch that we're talking about. It's not just the Seattle defense against the Patriots offense. You're also looking at a mismatch in running games. You know, the Seahawks have got Marshawn Lynch, one of the best running backs in football, one of the better running games in football, versus the Patriots team that doesn't. So when you're talking about Tom Brady versus Russell Wilson, you have to factor in which one has the supporting cast around them. Receiver-wise, you probably give the edge to Tom Brady in terms of receivers, but when it comes to winning the Super Bowl with the nuts and bolts of it, okay, the running game, the quarterback, the defense, it's just a mismatch in pretty much every area except for wide receiver, and the Seattle defense is probably going to neutralize that mismatch against Seattle.
Do you get the impression, Bo, that the Patriots come into this game with the air of desperation? I get that impression. What's kind of funny is, like, I would never accuse Tom Brady of being desperate, but there seems to be an air of desperation with this one, considering that he's lost the last two Super Bowls as being the favorite. They're a little bit of an underdog, which is fine, because back in the day when they were winning Super Bowls, they were always considered underdogs. But for whatever reason, it seems like there's an air of desperation with the New England Patriots, and there seems to be an air of calmness with the Seattle Seahawks. Like, they're not even worried at all about this game. It's not that they're overconfident. It's just they're confident in their abilities to go out and win a football game, because they've done it time and time again, and they've done it in this game. So there's nothing that's going to be too big or too small with the Seahawks. They're just calm. They're confident in their abilities. But with the New England Patriots, I get the feeling of desperation here, because this is a legacy issue here. Because if Tom Brady wins, it'll be his, what, fifth Super Bowl or fourth Super Bowl victory. And he'll be 4-2 in Super Bowls. He'll be Joe Montana. six Super Bowls, all that good stuff. But if he loses, he's 3-3, and now all of a sudden you're in that John Elway category, which is like you're, and nobody's going to argue that you're one of the greatest. But when it came to the big game, when it comes to the big game, you were less than stellar. I mean, I think what it was, I think what Elway was in five Super Bowls, only won two. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's going to be in that little category, and I have a feeling that there's a lot of desperation with this thing, especially with Belichick as well, too. These dudes just seem to be ego-driven, legacy-driven characters where they need this Super Bowl because this might be the last time that these two together might get to one. So it seems to me that this is going to be a game where they're going to try to pull out all the stops to try to get something going, minus deflating balls, you know, which the NFL has under wraps now for the Super Bowl, but. And what's kind of funny is that also plays into this thing because, again, to me, it almost has the feel of an Alex Rodriguez feel to this where what I'm saying is I'm not saying that both Belichick and Brady are dirtbags like with A-Rod, but what I mean, though, is legacy and ego are so much that they are willing to do certain things in order to make certain things happen. Like, I'll give you a good example, like Spygate. Like, they had, put it this way, the Patriots had – so much talent back in the day that they didn't need to do that in order to win Super Bowls. They could have just did it without using Spygate. Same thing with these deflated balls, Bo. They didn't need to do these type of things. They could have beaten the Colts any day of the week, and it wouldn't have mattered. But it was the ability to have something in their back pocket in case something went wrong. And to me, that kind of reeks of desperation. It was almost like A-Rod. Yeah. He didn't have to do what he did to be a Hall of Fame caliber player, but he did it anyways because he couldn't not be considered one of the all-time greats. He had to do what he had to do, even though he didn't need to do it. And I understand that the comparisons may be just a little far-fetched, but you understand like the gist of it. It's ego and legacy are playing such a huge factor here where now it's like what happens, what excuse is going to happen if the Seahawks come out and absolutely punk them like they did the Broncos. What excuses they're going to be, you know what I mean? It, to me, it just seems that the Patriots will do whatever they have to do to win this game.
Well, you know, I think it's two things. I think you're right on when it comes to legacy. You know, they're really conscious of that at this point in, you know, Belichick and his career, Brady and his. They're really at that point where now it's all about legacy. It's really not even about winning the championship. It's about their legacy. So I get that part, but I think another factor in this is you've got two competing windows here. You've got Seattle's window, which has just opened last year. Russell Wilson's in his, third year as a quarterback. You've got the window just now opening for Seattle, and it's closing for the New England Patriots. So that's why you're getting that sense of desperation. It's not just the legacy. It's the fact that they know their window is closing. This may be their last shot to get another Super Bowl championship to New England, and they're facing a team that is on the rise, that is a fantastic football team, younger than they are, better than they are.
The Seahawks are what the Patriots were 10 years ago when they were winning division titles every single year and winning Super Bowls 3 out of 4 years. I mean, it was kind of funny is, generally speaking, windows are only open for about 3 years, but New England managed to keep their window open for a decade. And the same thing, this is what the Seahawks are building here. And if you notice, they have all their key defensive core locked up now for the next 4 years. I mean, this is not going to be your typical window for a sports franchise, just like the Patriots were 10 years ago. We're not a typical window for a sports franchise. So there's a lot of – I'm glad that you brought that up because there's a lot of parallel. But what's kind of funny about this – but what's funny about this is it just seems that, basically the Patriots look like that old comedian that is 15 years past his prime that still thinks he's cool but is doing shows in lesser clubs now because he can't, you know, because he can't book big time gigs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They just have that feel of not being that relevant cool guy anymore. So I look at this and I say to myself, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, they do have some pieces that could be, but it just seems to me that if this game is getting out of hand, you'll see some things that are going to be a little bit less New England Patriots-y than what we were. I said it, Patriots-y, than what we're expecting to see it. I just look at this as maybe desperation. I don't know. Like, desperation can be a very good thing, but it also could be a very bad thing as well, too, because you're going to end up stepping out of what your comfort zone possibly could be. But then again, I mean, I'm sure we both in our personal lives have been to a point where we're desperate to do something, that we will do anything to get what we need because we feel like we feel so passionate about it. But we also understand that you can also take a step back while trying to take two steps forward. So, I err on the side of caution for Patriots fans, because Patriots fans are completely blind, and I hate to say it, but they are. They're completely blind and they're misguided, and they think that Tom Brady is still relevant, even though that Tom Brady is not the same quarterback. So I err on the side of caution for Patriots fans, because you know what? This was exactly the same thing going into last year's Super Bowl, where it was everybody just expected the offense to do what they do, and the Seahawks punked Denver so bad. And then we started hearing the excuse making, and it's like, well, they didn't have this guy and they didn't have this guy. But you know what? You were still a very good team, and you still should have done more than what you did.
Right.
And that, to me, I have a feeling that just might happen, that this may just happen again. But I also want to touch on the coaching aspect as well, too, Bo. And the reason why I want to talk about this is because, again, it's Bill Belichick and his sixth time in 13 years into the Super Bowl. And this is a familiar territory for him. He understands the highs and lows of this game, and I would probably assume that coaching one way or another is going to be an advantage. But Bo, Pete Carroll is now doing this for the second consecutive year, and if there was any concerns, well, that happened last year. I don't see an advantage going both ways with coaching. I really don't. I think both coaches understand exactly what either team is going to do. I think it's a wash.
You know, I think it's a wash for a different reason. You're basically saying that, you know, it's a wash in terms of the coaches, but I think if this was more of an even matchup, then you might get into, okay, well, Belichick's been there before, and he's very sneaky, and he does a lot of things, and Carroll's more straightforward, and he just runs his team, sticks to the game plan, and that kind of thing. But when you're talking about a mismatch like this, you know, if there is a differential between Carroll and Belichick, which I agree with you, I don't see it. I think it's a wash. But if there was a differential there, the talent on Seattle's side versus the talent on England would really – close that gap. But I don't think there's a gap at all. You know, I think Pete Carroll, obviously he's been here, and it's not just this big game. You know, he was at national championships at USC. He knows how to coach a team in a big game. Okay, and it may not, whether it be the Super Bowl, be it the national championship game, he knows how to coach a team in the big game, just like Belichick does. Belichick may have more. His window started about a decade before Pete Carroll's did. But in the same breath, this isn't exactly a guy that doesn't have big game experience. And Pete Carroll. So I don't see a mismatch there. I think that they're both going to do what they do. You know, Belichick is going to probably do some sneaky stuff. He's going to try some trickery, especially if they get down early. He's going to try some trickery, and that's fine. Seattle's just going to run their game plan. And that's what the good news is for Seattle, and if you guys up there in Seattle, it's you just have to watch your team execute their game plan. You don't have to worry about what the Patriots are doing, as long as the Seahawks stick to their game plan and play at the level that we're all used to seeing them play, let the Patriots do what they want to do. That's fine.
Right.
Because Seattle can stop. Seattle can if you look at the phases of the game, be it pass, run, kicking, trickery, there's nothing that the Seattle defense, if they play straight up man-to-man, can't cover and can't stop. And that's what makes this defense so good. And that's why this team is so good, and that's why they're going to another Super Bowl.
Right. What I love about this is it's Hall of Famer versus Hall of Famer. Let's make no mistake. Bill Belichick is in his own right a Hall of Famer.
Right.
But so is Pete Carroll. Make no mistake, so is Pete Carroll. This is going to be a guy who, when it's all said and done, will be one of only a few coaches to win multiple national titles in college and then win multiple Super Bowls at the NFL level. And I think he would be in a class with the name of somebody that you're familiar with. I don't know, Jimmy Johnson. I don't know. Maybe that's very good company. Guys that just know how to win. Guys that know how to win understand the magnitude – understand the situation, and most importantly, understand how to put their guys in the correct spots in order to win. And if they lose, do you know what I love about this? Do you know what I love about Pete Carroll? It's a little bit more than Bill Belichick, because he's classy. He is classy even in a loss, where he will. It's not the issue of saying the right things, but you know what he will say? They beat us. We did everything. We did everything that we possibly could have done to win this game. We didn't make the right, you know, we ourselves didn't necessarily make the plays that we were hoping to, but give them credit because they're the ones that stepped up and won that thing. He is so classy, even in loss, but he's also classy in win. That's why, you know, what's kind of funny is I got to be honest. I got to admit something, okay? I never liked Pete Carroll, okay? I didn't like him when he was with the Jets. I didn't like him when he was with the Patriots. I certainly didn't like him when he was in the Pac-10 with USC and kicking the crap out of my Washington State Cougars by 50 every single year. And I certainly didn't like him when let's be perfectly honest, when he ran to Seattle amid the Reggie Bush scandals. I certainly didn't like him then. I didn't know exactly what to expect because I didn't think that the rah-rah, always compete, win forever mantra was going to work well with professionals, but I was wrong. And people and these players love Pete Carroll. This is an organization that is hungry from the top down, from the owner all the way down to the players. Everybody is on the same page, and all of them are hungry for the exact same thing, and it has worked. This air of confidence in organization is rare because of ego. Let's be perfect. We're talking about a sport that makes billions. And when money is involved, though, ego becomes crazy. And yet this team is a model of what ego is not. These teams have individual egos, but they are all managed to a point where everybody, when you hear, whether it's Richard Sherman, whether it's Marshawn Lynch, whenever he does speak, whether it's Russell Wilson, whether it's Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Paul Allen, have you ever noticed that they say the exact same thing? And it's not by design. It's not scripted. It's because everybody has bought into the exact same philosophy. They believe in greatness. That is so rare. That is so rare, and it wouldn't have happened without Pete Carroll. He's a Hall of Famer.
Well, you know, I was wrong about him too. You know, not obviously for the reasons you were. I mean, you you had other things that you didn't like about him, but I didn't think that he would have another go around the NFL where it would be different than the first one. You know, I just didn't think of him as an NFL head coach. After his other stint in the NFL, I thought he had found a home in USC, and I didn't understand why he left. So I was wrong, too. You know, a lot of people were wrong about Pete Carroll going to Seattle, and what he's done is turn that team from a perennial loser into what looks to be a team that's going to be a force for the next 5-10 years, because not only do they have one Super Bowl from last year, not only do they have, as you mentioned, all this defensive talent coming back in the next 4 or 5 years, they've also got a quarterback that's still got another 10 years at least playing at an elite level.
Well, you know, the Seahawks under Mike Holmgren, they were good. I mean, they went to a Super Bowl, and at one point won 4 consecutive division titles. I mean, they were good, but they weren't great. They were more soft than anything else. That reputation of that Seahawks team were soft. They wanted guys that were good pillars in the community. They wanted good guys. And you know, ultimately what they say is good guys finish last. I don't necessarily buy that. But in the NFL, I probably would assume that's correct. And Pete Carroll is the anti-Mike Holmgren. I mean, it doesn't matter what your past was. It doesn't matter, what your personality is. It's just a matter of what you can bring to the team moving forward. And Pete can just manage people that way. I mean, that's the testament of a very good – I mean, it doesn't matter what sport. It's whether or not you have good management skills and you're able to take a knucklehead and make them buy in and understand that this is possibly the best opportunity for you to be great, but you have to trust me. And they have. That's a very good testament. But, Bo – we have a special guest on the line, Bo.
We do.
I sprung this one on you. I wanted you to be just as excited as our guest who is joining us right now. He is the only commissioner of fraud.
Okay.
There's many people that use the word fraud, but he is the official Commissioner of Fraud, sitting in the office of Ames, John Ames himself. Good morning, Commish. How are you doing?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Oh, better now, dude. It's the Commissioner of Fraud.
Right?
The commission's in the house.
Is it safe to say that the Commissioner of Fraud has made his official appearance for Super Bowl week? Is it official to do that now?
It's very official. You know what I love about this? Because Major League Baseball just brought in their new commissioner, and Rob Manfred has nothing on the Commissioner of Fraud. It goes in this order. This is how it goes. Okay, it goes Gary Bettman last because he's just last. Then it goes Adam Silver. Then it goes Roger Goodell, and then it goes Rob Manfred. And then, of course, there's John Ames, Commissioner of Fraud, in the house. And the reason why I wanted you on today's show is because I believe there is a team playing in the Super Bowl that is as fraudulent as fraudulent to the term. And the only person that can really explain fraudulent in this sense would be the Commissioner of Fraud.
But
absolutely.
And I believe you're going to refer to the New England Patriots as being fraudulent. And I'm going to say this much, okay? Because, you know, do you want my pick for the Super Bowl? Because I've been mum on Facebook. Well, I'm sure many people.
By the way,
we are
going to get to our predictions in just a moment. But I want a good detail of fraud in this case, because I will give you mine. Okay, my case for fraud is simply this. I don't believe Tom Brady is the same quarterback as he was 10 years ago or even 3 years ago. I think Tom Brady has to have a Rob Gronkowski to do his thing or a LeGarrette Blount to do his thing, or he looks absolutely pedestrian. And we've seen this when the Patriots don't have Gronkowski, they look mediocre on offense. This is a team that does not possess explosive offense, John. As a matter of fact, they're second to last in plays in 20 yards or more. So this is a team that really relies on yards after catch. And, of course, they're playing the best team in the NFL against yards after catch in a Seahawks defense that just doesn't do it. We'll have to get – John just dropped real quick. He's going to be back on in just a second, Bo.
I agree with everything you just said.
Yeah. I will say this, and of course John will be back in just a second. Hold on real quick as the commish just lost his connection. You know, for as good as he is as a commissioner, he needs better Wi-Fi.
He does need better Wi-Fi. Let me ask you this. While we're waiting for John to come back, let me ask you this. Look at the road to the Super Bowl for the New England Patriots. Okay, they have the bye. They play a Ravens team that barely qualified for the playoffs, and then they play a Colts team that they were just—I mean, it's a young Colts team that's just not ready for that.
And a team they can beat any day of the week. Let's be honest.
Right.
I mean, the Colts couldn't handle that running game. I mean, when you look at the road to the Super Bowl, especially for the Patriots, I mean, they came out of the NFC East, which is really Bills, Jets, Dolphins.
Right.
So, I mean, there's 6 games right there that, I mean, that they have feasted off a lousy AFC East. So.
And then they hit the playoffs. And then they get
a Baltimore team. I mean, by the way, it's kind of funny because I actually thought John Steelers were going to win that game. I wasn't buying Joe Flacco this year in the playoffs.
Right.
I actually thought the Steelers were a little bit better primed to win that game. And, of course, credit to Baltimore. I mean, they really did punk out the Steelers in that game. But for the most part, this is and we have John Ames back here, the Commissioner of Fraud. And as I was saying, John, this is a team that really relies a lot on the yards after catch against a Seahawks team that just does not allow teams to do that. In order for me to even come close to picking the Patriots here, I would have to say that LeGarrette Blount is going to have to be able to do his thing, and same with Rob Gronkowski. But again, John, this is a Seahawks defense that will systematically have Tom Brady for lunch. Put it this way, John. If I felt in any way, shape, or form that the Patriots could even win this game, I probably would pick them. like, you know me, I'm not a big fan of the NFL anymore, and so what's kind of funny about this is you would probably think I would be excited because my hometown team is in the Super Bowl, but, you know, I'm basically on the I can take myself away from the sideline and look at this thing objectively, and I got to say, man, from start to finish, the New England Patriots kind of have – it's for a Super Bowl team, they're kind of fraudulent.
Well, let me say this on that, because I cannot deem the Patriots fraudulent right at this moment, and I'm gonna give you two reasons why. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Whether we like these guys or we don't like these guys have a proven track record.
Sure.
Are they going up against one of the toughest defenses probably that they have faced in the Super Bowl? Yeah. But that Giants defense that they faced wasn't a slouch either.
Right, right.
Listen, Belichick canceled his walkthrough for today. He's feeling that confident. Now, in years past, when they have made it to the Super Bowl, Belichick has not done that. So, listen, 2 weeks to prepare for this game for Bill Belichick, this is not going to be a repeat of what Seattle did to Denver a year ago. Okay, I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how you slice and dice it. The X factor is always going to be Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. These guys are going to show up tomorrow. Brady is going to keep this Patriots. Brady will keep the Patriots in this game. And if Seattle does what they did at the beginning of the Green Bay game against New England tomorrow.
I agree with that.
New England will put the daggers through their heart where Green Bay did not.
I completely agree with that. Let me ask you this, because I asked this to Bo early in the question. I'm curious about how you feel it. To me, there seems to be an air of desperation with the New England Patriots. And what I mean by that is, and I'll reshape this again, because John, this is not Tom Brady 10 years ago or even 3 years ago. This is a Tom Brady that literally needs whatever pieces that he has, they have to be able to do what they do to empower Tom Brady to be what everybody expects Tom Brady is. I don't look at Tom Brady as being that Joe Montana great quarterback as we've seen in the early part of his career when those two were systematically just eating every single team in this league up. You know, I don't see that anymore with Tom Brady. What I will say about this is it seems to me that ego and legacy are so paramount for these guys that they will literally pull out all the stops in order to get this win because it's that much more important. On the flip side, I think the Seahawks have a steady air of calmness. I don't think it's an overconfident with the Seahawks or even a cocky thing with the Seahawks. I think that they believe that they can win they can win any game that they play in, and because they did this in the Super Bowl last year, they understand the magnitude and how to win this game. So they're just going about their business. If anything, there's a chip on their shoulder because this is the New England Patriots, and a lot of people think they're going to win this game. So the Seahawks feel like they're the underdogs, even though they might be a little bit of a slight favorite. To me, I just feel, John, a sense of desperation with the New England Patriots. Like, I wouldn't say that they're scared, but they want to win this game so bad that maybe they just might try to pull out all the stops in order to do this one. And again, desperation can be a good thing, John, but it also can be a bad thing. And I have a feeling that it's going to go either two ways. Either the Seahawks are going to win this game close. If the Patriots are to win, it will be extremely close. Or the Seahawks will do what they did the Broncos last season, and this thing is going to be a blowout. I'm not going to say it's a blowout, John. I still think the Seahawks are going to win this game, but I just don't see this defense allowing Tom Brady to be what everybody expects Tom Brady to be. Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense to me, but listen, you can't discount Tom Brady. And listen, we've all at some point have done this with the New England Patriots where we have discounted Tom Brady and the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick and this and that and the game has passed them by and they're too slow and they're too this and Brady doesn't have the weapons and yada yada yada. I mean, the list goes on and on. We've done that over the course of time, guys. We all have at some point in time. We all have.
Right. Right.
I don't see the Patriots as being desperate. Okay, this is the Super Bowl. Everybody wants to win the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter who you are. Everybody wants to win. I don't think that there is an air of desperation because, let's face it, guys, New England is still going to own the AFC East.
Right.
Whether they win this game or they lose this game tomorrow, they're still going to own the AFC East. They're still probably going to be a playoff team next season and probably for a few more seasons to come. So I don't think it's an air of desperation, but I do think in the back of guys like Brady and Belichick's mind that they are, yeah, there is a legacy issue that, hey, you know what? Father time is creeping up. It's not the same as it was 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 14 years ago.
And what's kind of funny about this, and when you think about the deflated balls and the ridiculous deflate gate, like I made the point to Bo that it's almost Alex Rodriguez-ian type of issue where, like, granted, these two are not on the same level of dirtbag as Alex Rodriguez, John, but the point is that legacy and ego play such a huge role that they didn't need to do what they did against the Colts in order to beat the Colts. They could have just done it. They didn't have to do Spygate back in the day, but they did. But here's the thing, right?
And I'm not here.
Yeah, neither am I. Neither am I, John. I'm just saying, and my point is simply this, that they had that in their back pocket in case something should go wrong. Like, to me, that – I don't know about you, but to me, that screams desperation – that they would have something like that in their back pocket if something should go wrong. Like, I'm not accusing the Patriots of cheating because it kind of toes the line of what cheating could possibly be, but they had that in their back pocket. And to me, that kind of feels desperate. You know what I mean?
No, and I get that, but I don't know. I mean, I don't see these guys. First of all, they didn't need to deflate the balls because whether the balls were deflated or fully inflated, they were going to blow the Colts out anyways.
Right,
okay?
Yeah.
They were going to blow the Colts out anyways. I think that's a known fact. You know, I listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I do, number one, for everybody out there that's a Seahawks fan, I mean no disrespect, you are not going to blow out New England tomorrow. Okay, let me get that right off the table, right off the
just
bat.
Like,
this
just,
is not
just
going
like,
to be
just
a
like,
repeat.
Just like Peyton Manning wasn't going to get blown out in last year's Super Bowl. I digress. I'm just saying.
Wait a minute. I want to touch on that for a minute because you're facing two different quarterbacks. You got two different elements. Peyton Manning
is not a big game
quarterback. He is not.
Yeah.
He does not have killer instinct. Tom Brady does, guys. There's a big difference there. There's a big difference with Moxie and Swagger with those two quarterbacks. And that's why I don't think that this is going to be – I don't think it's going to be if New England wins. I don't think it's going to be a blowout on New England's end.
No,
but
I
would
agree
with that. I don't see it being a blowout on Seattle's end.
I completely agree with that. I think it could. I think if New England can't establish it early, establish what they want to do early, and Seattle is able to take advantage of it, I think it could get away from New England really early. But again, a lot of factors have to go into that. Seattle is going to have to. Basically, they're going to have to do exactly what they did in the early stages of last year's Super Bowl, which is basically set their physical identity early and basically make Tom Brady beat them. Let's get into predictions because we are at that point in time where now it is our official prediction. And, of course, I want to start with Bo. And I know you've been chopping at the bit to make your prediction. I made mine yesterday, and I will repeat my prediction again today on the air. But, Bo, let's start with you. Your predictions for Super Bowl XLIX.
Well, guys, you know, like we talked about earlier in the show, Steve, you know, I look at this game and I just see a mismatch. I see a Seattle defense that is going to really be able to give Tom Brady fits. And I understand it's Tom Brady. I understand everything John's saying. And I don't think it's going to be anything like last year. You know, I mean, last year's Super Bowl was out of hand, the first 5 minutes of that game? The very first snap, of which I don't think any of us ever has ever seen in the Super Bowl. I don't think we ever think we're going to see it again. That was just weird. You know, but I do think that Seattle has advantages all across the board in this game, you know, defensively against Tom Brady. I think that, you know, if Brady had a little bit better of a running game and certainly a better running back behind him, it'd be a little bit different. and they really, like, over this stretch, you know, where they, when they started at 6-4 and they just won the next 10 games in a row, you know, they really cleaned up their run defense. I look at this game and I just see 31-17 Seattle.
Ooh, 31-17. Woo.
31-17 Seattle. Now, it's, I don't think it's, like I said, it's not going to be like last year where it was over really the first few minutes of the game. You know, I see that, I think Seattle's going to pull away late. You know, I think it's going to be tight at halftime. They're going to make some adjustments to what they're doing at halftime, and then third and fourth quarters really start to separate from New England. But I see 31-17 Seattle.
John, 31-7, that's a good score. John, my prediction is 24-13 Seattle, and here's what I will say, that I believe that the New England Patriots will be able to establish their run with LeGarrette Blount. I actually like LeGarrette Blount a little bit in this matchup against Seattle's defense. I like New England's, what they've been able to do, especially over the last 8 weeks with their offensive line. I think that is basically an underrated story that nobody's talking about with the Super Bowl. It's basically allowed Tom Brady to do what Tom Brady does because of the solidarity of that offensive line. And when you were saying that, when you were talking about how this is not going to be a blowout, I can see it from that angle, because that offensive line has allowed LeGarrette Blount to do what he's been doing, and it has allowed Tom Brady to use Edelman and Gronkowski in a way that, well, everybody expects him to use. So there's that. That being said, I just think this is a different defense that Tom Brady hasn't seen. He saw it a couple years ago when he was out in Seattle, but that was a different time, and it was a different level of play that the Seahawks defense has been running at. And what I will say to this is, I do believe that you're going to see LeGarrette Blount do some stuff. The one thing that I will say that I don't think that New England is going to be able to benefit from is the yards after catch with guys like Edelman and guys like Gronkowski that really allow that Patriot offense to go. I think Seattle's defense is too quick, too physical, too long for, you know, for the Patriots to be able to, you know, to use that as their advantage. And because of it, I see some three and outs that normally that we wouldn't see from the Patriot offense. I don't see a lot of points from the Patriots offense. I'm not saying that they're going to be held without a touchdown, but I can see a touchdown, two field goal type of situation for the Patriots. And, you know, for the Seahawks offense, it's not just establishing Marshawn Lynch early, John. It's also getting Russell Wilson into a little bit of a groove early with the passing game. And, you know, that means you have to use a read option a little bit more than you would like to, just to get that side-to-side, lateral running game going, just to give them something else that opens up maybe Luke Wilson at the tight end spot, or maybe Jermaine Kearse, who probably is going to have a bigger game than what we've seen from him. I think that's going to be huge for the Seahawks offense. I don't think they're going to score in the 30s, but I also think their defense is going to win this game. And I'm going to say 24-13, 11-point victory.
Oh. I love how you let the guests go last.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, you like that? I also got a little.
I also
got a little something else for you at the end of the show, too. I think you're going to enjoy it.
I hope it's Dick LeBeau's retirement papers.
No. And by the way, he's not retiring. He just resigned. He's not retiring.
Anyhow, so on to the game. I'm gonna be obviously the guy that stands alone on this, and I'm picking New England. I am picking New England in this game tomorrow. Here is why I'm picking New England. I think the biggest thing, this is a different Seattle team than what we saw a year ago. This Seattle team went through somewhat of a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover, I think it's safe to assume.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But
yep, a little bit
the
of
one thing I saw, the one thing that I saw with Seattle that concerned me is that these guys seem to think that they can walk in and that they're just automatically going to win the game by entering the building. Look, you got a great football team, got an outstanding defense that I love to watch, but you are going up against a different element than what you have faced in the biggest game on the biggest stage that we can talk about. And I cannot discount Tom Brady. I just can't do it. And
you know what? you, John, are like me in a lot of ways because I also cannot pick against Tom Brady. It's hard for me to pick against Tom Brady. Everything that you said is valid. Everything that you said is valid. I just wanted to throw that in there. I understand fully where you're coming from. It's hard to pick against Tom Brady.
And listen, no, please. Because I'm sure that there are Seattle fans that are huge fans here. No disrespect to your team, your city, whatever.
Go ahead, man.
But folks,
no doubt.
You are facing a different element with the New England Patriots and the postseason and everything being on the line. Now, look, Seattle could go out there tomorrow and prove me 100% wrong. And if they do, I will gladly come back on your show and admit that.
Yeah.
No.
And you will.
No
will
problem.
Will you gladly come up the freeway and buy me beer if you're wrong?
I don't bet.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The commish is he's officially off the bets. That's why you're the commish, because you've gotten wiser. You've gotten wiser in age. So, what's the score? If you got the Patriots winning, what's the score?
24-20 New England.
24-20 New England. That's actually not a bad score. So we got two for the Seahawks, one for the Patriots. We will definitely see tomorrow, but we have some time left, John and Bo. Guess what time it's for? Guess what time it's for? Prop bets.
The fraud of the Super Bowl.
Yep. Okay. So here we go. Prop bet number one. What will Katy Perry be wearing when she sings the halftime show?
Bo, you got this one, man.
What will Katy Perry be wearing?
Yes.
Can I say what I hope that she's wearing?
Go ahead. This is a family show.
Oh, of course it is.
Eventually the kids are going to find out about this in 5 or 6 years, so why not? Let's get an early head start.
Well, you know, I'm thinking tight leather pants and a very revealing top of some kind. Not quite see-through, but... One that does give us the possibility of a malfunction like Janet Jackson.
Right. Although I think everybody is hoping for a malfunction, wardrobe malfunction this time around. It's like that's what the hope is. My hope, guys, is that she comes out nude. But then again, you know, I think that's what every guy's fantasy is. But I'm thinking like a two-piece, like a bikini-ish type of thing where it's very, very, very revealing. Leaves a lot to the imagination. Wardrobe malfunction. I think Bo hit on it. Everybody's hoping for the chance of a wardrobe malfunction, but my hope is new, but, you know, it is what it is. John, what do you think?
Well, it's going to be next to nothing, pretty much. But being that she picked the Seahawks, it's going to be in a Seattle-themed color scheme.
Ooh.
On a scale of 1 to 10, do you guys think Katy Perry is kind of hot?
Oh, definitely.
Does Katy Perry do it for you guys?
Oh yeah.
You think she? Oh yeah. Okay.
Put it this way. I never, ever watch the halftime show. I will be glued to the halftime.
Show. Yes. I might be. I'm not really
I'm
a halftime show
the halftime
type of guy
show
either.
More than the commercial.
That's the thing is I'm more of a commercial guy, not the halftime show, because I just think halftime show is ridiculous. But I might watch this.
Not this
I don't
year.
Know. We'll see. How about this one? MVP going to a kicker. Steven Gotkowski or Steven Hauschka? It's the battle of the Stevens. Kickers being an MVP. Prop bet. It's 100-1. John, you go first on this one.
I'm going to take Gotkowski just because I'm picking the Patriots.
Okay, that's the whole thing. I mean, this is I guess it's a pick'em because first and foremost, let's get this out of the way. A kicker will not win the MVP, but if it was to happen, you're taking Gostkowski. Bo, who are you taking?
I'm taking Gostkowski. I think we're going to see more of him than Hauschka.
I'm taking Hauschka just because he's got a better last name. How about this one? Iggy Azalea, I think she's singing the national anthem. So here's the prop bet. How many words will she omit? Will Iggy Azalea forget or omit at least one word of the national anthem? Will she just miss a word?
Yes.
So basically,
yeah,
will
I'll
she
take
just
that. Yeah.
Will she mess up the national anthem?
Actually, you know, the actual question might be, is she going to be lip syncing the national anthem? That might be the better question.
Well, she is Australian, so I think the chance is pretty high that somehow she screws up the national anthem, our national anthem. So, yeah.
Well,
I'll take
that bet. Saying I apologize. It's not Iggy Azalea. It's Idina Menzel. Excuse me. She's a 15-year-old. Or no, excuse me. She is a singer who is behind the song of Disney smash hit Frozen. So she she is the one who is going to be singing the Star Spangled Banner. So again, it's going to be, will she mess this up or no? I would hope no, because it's one thing to do it like on a random at a random baseball game, John, or a random hockey game. So, where if you happen to mess up, okay, it's cool. Everybody will kind of feel sorry for you. But this is the Super Bowl. This is the game where you can't mess up the Super Bowl. So you know what? You have to have ice water in your veins. I'm going to say no, that she won't mess this up. But then again, I think judging from your guys' answers that you wouldn't be surprised if she does mess it up.
Well, for one, she's 15. For two,
yeah,
it's the Super Bowl. For three, this isn't a Disney cartoon. So,
yeah, that's true. It's not Frozen.
Well, I don't know. Last Super Bowl was kind of like a Disney cartoon.
That's true. That's true. How about this one? What color will Bill Belichick's hoodie be? Gray, blue, or red?
Ooh. You know, I'm going to go with gray. They seem to win more when he's wearing gray. And I would imagine that he would be superstitious like that. So I'm going to go gray. I think he's going to go with his winning hoodie.
The winning hoodie.
And probably
lose. Gray. I like that. He'll go with the winning tradition and then probably crap the bed. John?
No hood tomorrow.
No hood tomorrow.
Whoa. He's not.
What are you going to go, Kangle?
He's in Arizona, guys. Come on.
Is he going to go with a scarf? Is he going to go with was he going to go with a backwards hat like Junior?
Listen, he's going hoodie. In Arizona. Come on.
He's going hoodie.
No,
this question is ridiculous.
Not.
Who cares? Who cares what color
exactly.
It is? Who cares? How about this one?
He wears the hoodie in OTAs in the middle of the summer, John. Come on.
That's true. He is Mr. Hoodie in khaki pants. How about this one? Hoodie type, sleeveless cutoff like we've seen him, or full hoodie?
He's in Arizona. I don't think he's going to go full.
He's going to go cutoff. He's going to go sleeveless hoodie. Gross. Gross. All right. So here we go. Here's another one. How many times will Katy Perry be mentioned in the first half? Over, under, two.
Over.
Over.
I would probably say over, okay. Two.
Come on. I think it's Katy Perry. It's going to be about like Brent Musburger with what's-his-name's girlfriend. It's going to be like that for the entire first half.
All right. How about this one? Who will record the first Seahawks reception in the game? By the way, Doug Baldwin right now is the odds-on favorite at 2-1, but I am actually going to go with Luke Wilson or Marshawn Lynch, one of those two.
I'm going with Lynch. I think that early on in that game, they're going to try and establish a running game, and then you might see a couple screen passes.
Ooh, John.
I'm going with Lynch.
I'm going with Wilson.
You're going to go with Luke Wilson. I kind of feel Luke Wilson as well too. I think Luke Wilson is going to play
tight
a huge role
end,
in this game.
Man. If yep. you want to come out and set the tone, come out and hit your tight end.
How about this one? Will Al Michaels refer to the point spread, total, odds on who wins this game, or any prop bet during the game?
Yeah.
Nah. John says no. Bo says
nah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, this is kind of a dumb prop bet, but yeah, I'm sure he will. How about this one? Will Robert Kraft or Paul Allen be shown more on TV during the game? Which one? Will it be Robert Kraft or Paul Allen? Both, to me, both are ridiculously ugly, and I hope zero times, but I would probably say Bob Kraft will get shown more than Paul Allen.
Yeah, Robert Kraft.
Yeah, Bob Kraft. I mean, think about it. I mean, this is Super Bowl, what, six for him? So, yeah. They're going
to
show him a lot.
Next to Bo's guy, Jerry Jones, there's like two rock star owners in this league. It's like Jerry Jones, and it's like Bob Kraft. So, if the Patriots are I guarantee you, you'll probably see Bob Kraft at least more than four times in this game. They'll probably show Paul Allen like once. You know what I mean? Like that. Okay. There's Microsoft billionaire Paul Allen. He's the owner. Okay, that's cool. And then they'll show Bob Kraft at least five times. No doubt about it. How many times will deflated balls be said during the game?
Too many.
Way too many. I think we can set the over-under on that one to about 10.
How many times will Gisele Bündchen be shown during the game? Over-under is 1.5.
I'm hoping for a lot.
I'll say under one.
Which will be higher, the amount of minutes in the Silva versus Diaz UFC fight or LeGarrette Blount rushing attempts? That's pretty good. I have no idea who Silva and Diaz is, but apparently they're fighting. So basically they're saying is, will LeGarrette Blount have more rushes than the actual amount of minutes that fight will go on? I would probably think that LeGarrette Blount will probably have like a 25 carry type of ball game, so I would probably say that would be more.
Yeah, I'm saying more.
Yeah, I'll say more.
Who will the Super Bowl MVP mention first in his interview?
Okay.
God. Okay, so I guess the over-under is God or his wife if he's married, or maybe his teammates.
You know what? I've got this. Here's where I'm going with this, okay? I think the MVP is going to be Russell Wilson, and he's going to give a shout-out to his major league team, the Texas Rangers. That's happening.
Really? You're going to say Russell Wilson is going to win the MVP and then shout out to the Texas Rangers?
That's right.
Listen.
Come on.
If it's Marshawn Lynch, he's just going to say, "I'm only saying something so that I don't get fined."
Get fined. if he is the Super Bowl MVP, he is going to say this. Yeah. And then walk away. Yeah. Drop the Lombardi trophy and then walk away.
Drops the mic and walks off stage.
Right, exactly. How about this one? Will Marshawn Lynch grab his crotch after scoring a TD in this game? I am going, even though that they have said that he will be fined heavily if he does it, and they will be penalized if the Seahawks are up in a position where a 15-yard penalty is not going to make or break their game, I am most emphatically going to say yes.
Yeah, I think he does it anyway. I mean, you think about it.
I don't think he'll do it if the game is close, because I don't think Marshawn Lynch will do that to his teammates and potentially put him at a risk to lose the game. But if the Seahawks are up by like more than two touchdowns, yes.
Oh, he's definitely going to do it. He's going to. I mean, come on, you're talking about a guy that just loves to like jab at Goodell and stuff.
All right, John, what do you think? Will you grab the crotch?
If it's a close game, no, because you don't want to give an advantage to New England. If they start to run away with it, which I don't think that they will, yeah, he'll do it.
Will Bill Belichick smile during the game on camera?
Only if they win. And at the very end of the game. At the very end of the game, if New England wins this game, you'll get a smile from him right after they dump the Gatorade on him. That's when he'll smile. Until then, no.
He won't smile. Yeah, he's not going to smile before or during the game. And if you do get a smile, it will be after the game, and it's going to be a half-cocked, halfway smile that, yeah, okay, thanks. It's not going to be anything big.
And lastly, is John's prediction wrong? Yes, yeah, it's completely wrong. Bo, it's wrong. It's over. It's wrong. His pick was actually
wrong.
Against the commissioner of fraud. the Seahawks win this game, and it's not even close.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand the commissioner of fraud is the commissioner of fraud, but I have to call his dick fraudulent. I have
to.
Wow. See, you know what's kind of funny? What's kind of funny, John, is, you know what, I completely see where you're coming from, and a very large part of me agrees with it. What's kind of funny about this is the way that I look at this Super Bowl is if Seattle's offense, that's the whole thing. It's not even really about Seattle's defense to me in this game, and I know that we're pretty much against the wall. We just have a few more minutes left. I understand that this is not, to me, about Seattle's defense as it is about Seattle's offense. And we saw in the NFC Championship game where they were non-existent for 3.5 quarters, and it was because of the Packers' inability to put that game away that the Seahawks are even in the Super Bowl to even begin with. If they even come close to resembling what we saw in that NFC Championship game, John, you are completely 100% right. I just don't see that happening again. I think that was more of an aberration than anything else. I can't see Russell Wilson having a 4-interception game in the Super Bowl. This isn't Kerry Collins in the Super Bowl. This isn't Charlie Morton. He's not one of those type of quarterbacks. This is a kid who understands how to perform on this level. I just don't see that happening. But I get what you're saying. So I just think I don't know what to tell you, man. I think the Seahawks are going to win this game. But as promised, John, as promised, I told you I had something special for you at the end of this show. It has nothing to do with the sport of football, but it's a gift from me to you.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Lord.
Are you ready? Are you ready for this? Because I know that we are now about 4 weeks away from the start of spring training, and I wanted to give you something. Because I don't know if you knew this, okay? The Zips projection have come out, and the Pittsburgh Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates have yet to be projected. But on a separate thing, they have FanGraphs, and if you're familiar with FanGraphs, John, it's the Sabermetrician's guide to the galaxy or whatever. It's basically a full collection of sabermetrician nerds that break down all the numbers, and they have had projections. They have projections set up for your Pittsburgh Pirates. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Are you ready? Your Pittsburgh Pirates are predicted to finish 85-77 with a plus 36 run differential while averaging 4.05 runs per game. One game behind their predicted division winner, which is the St. Louis Cardinals, at 86-76. They also have your Pittsburgh Pirates projected as one of the wild card teams. So that is my gift to you. The early projections for the 2015 baseball season has your Pittsburgh Pirates back in the postseason.
That's a good gift. I hope they go further than just a wild card, and I really hope that they make a few moves, like number one, getting Mr. Alvarez out of town. But that's a topic for another show. So,
also, if you're interested, they also have the Seattle Mariners finishing first at 89-73 with a 67 plus run differential at 4.20 runs per game, and Bo's Texas Rangers finishing fourth in the division at 78-84, a negative 30 run differential. That, my friend, is a wonderful projection. So.
That's not John. This is why I do not like sabermetrics morons. Okay, this is why. Right here.
Oh, my, you guys crack me up.
I just want to let everybody know who's listening out there that Zips, the projections, and the people at FanGraphs, literally for the last 5 years, have been next to, if not spot on, with their predictions. Maybe within a differential of three games, but they have been pretty damn close when it comes to individual projections of players and also division standing. So you can sit there and call them sabermetrician dorks and nerds, and they live in their mother's basement. That being said, they're pretty dang close, John and Bo.
Do any of these nerds actually watch a game? That's my question. Do they even watch the game, or do they sit there on the computer looking at numbers?
I don't know. I don't know. I will say this, that I know a couple sabermetricians, and that's a very valid point, and I will say this, that sometimes my beef with sabermetricians, and sometimes they can't see the forest through the trees, meaning they're so glued to their computer screens and numbers that sometimes they fail to actually look at the game itself, because sometimes there's some things you can't extrapolate numbers, and that's just with the eye test, you know what I mean? When you look at it, when you actually watch the game and actually look at it, you know, from that standpoint of just watching the game in its pure self, sometimes there's some things that you can see that you can't quantify with numbers. So I will give you that. I will give you that point, Bo. But John, Bo, I want to thank you for taking time out of your Saturday morning. It's always good to have the Commissioner of Fraud on the show. I'm glad that you made your official Super Bowl pick on our show. And if you're wrong, which I believe you will be, you will have to come back on the show and tell us how much we were right. How about that? You will have to come on this show and say, you know what, you were right.
I will. How does that but sound? I also will come back on if I'm right too, and I want to hear you guys tell me how wrong you were.
I cannot confirm nor deny. I will do any such thing.
That seems fair. Seems about right.
Okay. Well, generally, at this point in time, we close out the show with what we are toasting with. John, it's what we will raise our glass to in the coming weeks. Now, it's either something personal. It can also be something sporting. It can be anything that is making you feel good at this point in time. So we close this out by raising our glass. You're going to tell us what is in your glass. Granted, right now on the West Coast, it is 10:36 right now here on the West Coast. I don't think that John or I have anything alcoholic in our glasses, and if we do, well, then that pretty much should tell you that we have a problem. But on the East Coast, it is past 12 o'clock on the East Coast, so if Bo has something adult beverage-y in his glass, nobody would be surprised. So, John, I'm going to start off with you as we close out this show. What is in your – what are you toasting, and what are you toasting for?
Right now, I'm toasting for my 3-day weekend this weekend.
Ooh, 3-day weekend! I love it.
I took the day after tomorrow off because of the Super Bowl and just wanting to hang out and enjoy my time with family, because we are having a gathering at my sister-in-law's.
Nice.
So, and plenty of good food. So I'm very happy about that. And right now, what's in my glass is nothing as of yet. Maybe soon to be in my future, a cup of coffee. But further on
nice.
Down the road, I'm hoping to divulge into some Buffalo Trace bourbon and Coke later on this evening.
Nice.
By the way, Bo, pay attention. That's how you toast, man, to friends and family, good food, good beer, the entire weekend extravaganza. What is Super Bowl weekend? It's not just about X's and O's. It's about family and friendship. That, my friend, is how you toast.
You never toast to family and friends either.
That's because because outside of my family, I don't really care too much for my friends. I'm just playing. I'm playing. I kid. So, Bo, is there anything alcoholic in your glass? I mean, I know it's past 12 where you're at. Is it that type of Saturday? What's
God,
in your glass,
no.
And what are you toasting?
Right now, in my glass is water.
Water. Okay.
Later it will magically transform into a Jameson Rocks, but for now it's water.
Okay.
And I am toasting one John Daniels, general manager of the Texas Rangers, who learned his lesson from last year and has actually put together depth on this Texas Rangers team in terms of the rotation, the bullpen, even in the lineup. You've got some depth now. He learned his lessons from last year, so I'm toasting that.
Mm.
Hey, can I have an additional add to my toast?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would also like to add this to my toast. Thank you, Dick LeBeau, for resigning. You have made my upcoming football season. Thank you so much. That is definitely worth drinking to. Okay, I'm done.
You can always add an addendum to the toast. There's no right or wrong way to toast. In my glass is a cup of coffee, because obviously it's morning and I like to drink coffee in the morning. Maybe I've had one extra glass too many, but I mean, that's yet to be debatable. So in my toast, I am going to toast the beautiful people at Fangraphs, the sabermetricians that have predicted the Texas Rangers to a fourth place finish. That is definitely something that I easily want to toast, because these people seem to understand baseball from a cumulative numbers perspective, and they just do not think that the Texas Rangers will pitch their way out of a box. And that kind of seems to be consistent with everything that I'm hearing with some of my coworkers at 1090 The Fan. So kudos, number one, to Fangraphs and their fourth-place finish projections for the Texas Rangers. Also, the first-place finish that they have for the Seattle Mariners, that would be lovely, 89 right. wins, winning the West, and ultimately going to the World Series and winning their first championship after the Seattle Seahawks claim their second consecutive Super Bowl victory and put a gift wrap on what we can consider a new dynasty. So basically what I'm saying, it is going to be the year of Seattle. So you know what? Eat it, America. Seattle is going to be on top of the sports world. And in 3 years, the Sonics will be back. So you know what? All is good in the Pacific Northwest. That, John, Bo, is one hell of a toast.
Anybody else find ironic that he lives close to Seattle and he's drinking coffee? Or is it just
me? Hey, does he have Nirvana playing in the background?
No, but I am wearing a cardigan, so that's kind of close. No, I'm playing. I'm not wearing a cardigan. All right, boys. It's been fun. It's been fun. John, as always, it's good, and I can't wait to get you back on the show. And regardless whether you're right or wrong, you'll still always be the commissioner of fraud in our hearts and, of course, the eyes of everybody in America. That is why he is the commissioner of fraud. Bo, of course, great show for you today. Thanks for everybody tuning in. And you know what? Bo, you usually take us out. You do a very good job because the commish was so good enough to grace us with those presents this morning. John, why don't you do the honors? Take us out, my friend.
Well, do everybody enjoy the weekend. Be safe out there. All you Patriots, Seahawks fans, and everybody who else is a football fan, be safe. If you're going to drink, don't drive. Enjoy the football. Enjoy the weekend, family and friends, as always. And we will see you again, folks. See ya!
Go Cougs. XOXO.